I hope you will join me this morning in lifting up before God our brothers and sisters in the state of Kentucky, and the surrounding states who suffered from those devastating storms on Friday night. You know, we've got a lot of brothers and sisters who are in that area, and I'm happy to say I've not learned of any serious injuries or catastrophic damage, but there have been some who have suffered loss. And as folks who've been through natural disasters before, we've had our share of those, right? We know where they are this morning and what we're going through. And so those are folks that we need to continue praying for. If we become aware of needs, we'll certainly make all of you aware of that as well. I'm also guessing that this is going to be our last regular Sunday together before the end of the year. I think schools are getting ready to let out, and families are going to be taking off on vacation. Maybe some of that will be supplemented with your family coming to town. I know my granddaughter is. I'm pretty happy about that. And before you know it, it's going to be 2022, folks. And we got some great plans for the coming year, a new theme, a new Bible reading program. We'll lay all of that out when we get into the new year and everybody gets back. But I hope you'll be thinking about that, be excited about the things that are coming up for us. I want to work this morning in Acts 21. So will you go there in your Bible to Acts chapter 21? There's a detail that we passed by when we were reading this. I guess about a month ago, this is where our Bible reading was found. And I want to ask you to focus in on this detail with me this morning. So to prep with that, can I remind you of the setting here in Acts 21. Paul is back in Jerusalem, and he has met with the elders of the church there who are concerned because there's some negative talk going on around Jerusalem about him, and the elders are concerned about that. So they ask him to participate with some men who are keeping a vow, and they think that his participation in this will sort of quiet down the criticism that's going on around about him. So he agrees to do that. And when we pick up in verse 27, that vow-keeping process is coming to an end. And this thing is starting to get real intense. So look at verse 27 of Acts 21. The text says, "When 7 days were almost over, the Jews from Asia, upon seeing him," talking about Paul, "seeing Paul in the temple, began to stir up the crowd and lay hands on him, crying out, 'Men of Israel, come to our aid. This is the man who preaches to all men everywhere against our people and against the law and this place. And besides, he has even brought Greeks into the temple and has defiled this holy place.'" Now, Luke will add parenthetically this in verse 29. This is our detail. "For they had previously seen Trophimus the Ephesian in the city with him. And they supposed that Paul had brought him into the temple." Remember that. Verse 30 said, "Then all the city was provoked, and the people rushed together, and taking hold of Paul, they dragged him out of the temple, and immediately the doors were shut. And while they were seeking to kill him, a report came to the commander of the Roman cohort that all Jerusalem was in confusion. At once he took along some soldiers and centurions and ran down to them. And when they saw the commander and the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul." So what happens here? If I was going to give you a real simple answer to that question, I would say that the enemies of Paul told themselves a story. Do you see how that works here? First of all, they gathered some facts about Paul. To be sure, this story they tell, folks, was not just pulled out of thin air. There were some facts behind it. Paul had been in Jerusalem, was in Jerusalem. And while he was there, he had been in the company of this Gentile, Trophimus. That's true too. That happened. And now Paul is in the temple. He needed to go there as part of this vow keeping that he was participating in. All of that was absolutely true. But what happens next isn't a fact. Will you look at that again in verse 29? It says in the latter part of the verse, they supposed that Paul had brought this Gentile into the temple. Now, that wasn't a fact. That was an assumption. And frankly, not a far stretch from their perspective. If you look back to verse 28, they already had a story going on about Paul and what a rotten guy he was, speaking against our people and our law and this place. They started all of this with negative impressions. So it was not an easy leap, or a difficult leap, rather, for them to assume as he's pushing his Gentile agenda, surely he's brought Trophimus into the temple as well. And so they tell themselves this story. And they share it with others. And there is this explosion in Jerusalem that nearly results in Paul's death. It was only the authorities showing up that gave them pause, and they rescue him. Here's the interesting thing. Their story wasn't true. I mean, I know they had reason, at least in their minds, to think badly of Paul, and they did have these facts that they had gathered about him, but the piece that they had added, their assumption, was untrue. He hadn't brought a Gentile into the temple. And yet, all of this ugliness followed as a result. I wanted you to think about verse 29 with me this morning. Now, to be clear, as I've described it, that's just a detail in the story. I don't think that Paul's, or Luke's intent here, rather, is to talk about the problem of storytelling. We just see that problem here. I think what Luke is doing is he's telling us this part of the story because it is an important transition. Paul goes from making all these journeys and preaching to all these places to being arrested and now going through a series of trials. That's what's getting ready to follow next. And Luke tells us this to help us make that transition because that's how it's going to play out through the rest of the book, which we've seen in our reading. But I do think this little piece is interesting. The story in verse 29 of their storytelling. It's interesting, brothers and sisters, because it goes on all the time. Not just on this occasion. It still happens today, and we all do it. And we hurt our families. We hurt our friends. And we hurt the work of God sometimes when we do. And so I think there are some things that God gives us to help us with our storytelling. And I'd like you to think with me a little bit about that this morning, since our Bible reading has caused us to see that again. Let me begin by just putting some facts on the table about the stories we tell. Let me repeat what I've already said. All of us tell stories. We all do it all the time. The problem is not whether or not it's happening. The problem is seeing us doing it and acknowledging that we're doing it. Let me describe these stories for a minute. It seems to me the stories we tell typically are made up of two pieces. First of all, there are facts. We collect facts on each other. Do you realize that? You have a story about me already. You may have been happy I was preaching this morning because you know it's going to be about 5 minutes shorter, right? So you've got a story on me. I hope Jeff is streaming this morning. I really hope he is. We tell stories about each other all the time. We collect facts about each other all the time. based on our interactions with each other, our conversations, the things we say, the things we do. And then what we begin to do is we begin to weave these facts together using our assumptions and our judgment. So we look at what people say and we look at what people do and we start assuming what's behind those actions, the motive that drives them, and we use that to weave together our story. That is exactly, if you look back at Acts 21, that is exactly what's going on here. They had some facts about Paul, some things that were true about Paul. He was in Jerusalem. He had been with a Gentile. He was in the temple, the portion of the temple that Gentiles were not allowed to go. All of that was true. But then they start grabbing other data that they have and they start making assumptions about Paul and they knit together the story. And we do it too. So I thought that I would repeat a story this morning that I think I've heard someone tell in every single church family that I've ever been part of. And I bet there are people sitting here today who have told this story too. So you come to the church building. As you're walking up in the door or coming into the lobby or heading down a hallway to a classroom, you encounter a brother, another member of our church family. And as the two of you pass in the hall, he doesn't even look at you. He doesn't give the courteous glance and nod. He just blows right by you without an acknowledgement or a word. Now, all of that is fact. That happens. It happens all the time, doesn't it? But then we begin to judge and make assumptions about those behaviors. So why didn't he say anything to me? Maybe he's mad. Maybe he just doesn't like me. Maybe he thinks I'm not as important as he is. And the story is born. That brother is rude. That brother looks down on me. That brother doesn't like me. And then we run with the story. We begin watching for other behaviors that will support the story that we've created. And worse yet, we start sharing the story. Goes on all the time. Are you hearing some stories you've told before? The other thing that's interesting is that we tell our stories with lightning fast speed. It did not take those enemies of Paul in Jerusalem very long from seeing him in the city to leaping to this conclusion, he's brought a Gentile into the temple and starting this riot. And it doesn't take us long either. We press that brother in the hall. He didn't speak to us. And immediately we have a feeling. Maybe immediately we're angry. Or we're hurt. Question, where do the feelings come from? Oh, you see, we've already told a story. Someone says, that wasn't fast enough. We're really good at this. We could do it really quick. And I tell you how you know it's the story. Change the person. Now it's not some random brother in the church. It's my good friend. I've been going to church here for 30 years. We've known each other a long time. We hang out all the time. We spend holidays together. We are tight. We are best friends. Now it's that person who passes you in the hall and doesn't speak. And all of a sudden the feelings are different, aren't they? I'm not mad. Maybe I'm worried. Ooh, she didn't talk to me. Something must be wrong. Why the different feelings? Why aren't we angry, hurt, and put out? We told a different story. We told a different story just that fast. Thirdly, lots of things influence our story. We see that in Acts 21. Why did these guys leap to the conclusion that Paul has brought a Gentile into the temple? How did they get there? Are you still in Acts 21? Look at verse 28. It's not hard to see. Remember what they said about him? This is the man who speaks against our people and our law and this place. Paul is our enemy. They already had some negative stories working around about him before this incident takes place. Do you think that impacted how they judged him in this situation? What if it had been one of Paul's best friends? What if it had been one of the other apostles who saw him in the temple? Would the story have been the same? Lots of things influence our stories, not just the facts. If you and I have had some unpleasant interactions with each other in the past, that might influence how we read each other going forward into the future, right? Sometimes our history with someone is so bad that if they came up this morning and said, good morning, we would wonder, what do they mean by that? Right? Sometimes it's our own background that's the problem. I have a friend who over his lifetime has had some really unpleasant interactions with leaders that he served under, some men who had treated him really badly in his past. And I will tell you today, he struggles with men under whom he must, to whom he must submit, men who lead, because of his history. And sometimes it doesn't have to be anything so profound. Sometimes our stories are impacted by our mood. If you've had a perfectly terrible day, nobody's going to be a good player when you get home, right? That terrible mood influences how you read everything else everyone does. And so, if all of that is true, and this fourth one, this is the important one, this is the key. We need to remember that our stories are not facts. That's the interesting thing here in Acts chapter 21. Even though these men had some facts behind their story, and even though they were convinced that it's true, and even though they had a powerful emotional reaction, and others joined with them in the reaction, and even though there's a terrible riot that breaks out as a result of all of it, it still wasn't true. Paul didn't bring Trophimus into the off-limit places of the temple. And so, we need to be able to separate in our minds our facts, the facts from our stories. It may be a fact that your sister passed you in the hall and didn't speak to you, didn't even acknowledge your presence. That may be true. But to say that they did it because they're mad at me or look down on me or don't like me, that's a story. And there's another person involved in that story who may have facts that I don't have. I can only know that for certain with the conversation. I thought about all of that as I was piecing these thoughts together this week, because I actually had a situation recently here where I got called away because some of our family members had lost a loved one, and I'd been asked to go and be with them. And I could tell you, I exited this room, and I went out through the foyer, and there were people there. I don't know who they were, because I blew right past them. I didn't look over and acknowledge. I didn't shake hands. I didn't greet. I was going somewhere. So if you were there, and you were one of them, I need some grace. Or maybe we need to have a conversation, but there was more to that story. We need to be more skeptical of our stories. They're not facts, and a lot of stuff influences them and shades them. And sometimes if they're not just wrong altogether, at least our stories are incomplete. And when we start treating our stories as though they are facts, we end up doing exactly what the enemies of Paul did in Acts 21. We make terrible messes. I stumbled across this in the social media a while back. I thought it perfectly illustrated the problem. So I want to read it to you. These are the diary entries of a husband and wife reflecting back on the same day. Yeah, I know, I'm about to be in a lot of trouble. This is what the wife wrote about the previous day with her husband. She said, "Tonight I thought my husband was acting weird. We'd made plans to meet at a nice restaurant for dinner. I was shopping with my friends all day long, so I thought he was upset at the fact that I was a bit late, but he made no comment on it. Conversation wasn't flowing, so I suggested that we go somewhere quiet so we could talk. He agreed, but he didn't say much. I asked him what was wrong. He said nothing. I asked him if it was my fault that he was upset. He said, 'I'm not upset, and it doesn't have anything to do with you. Don't worry about it.' On the way home, I told him I loved him. He smiled silently and kept driving. I can't explain his behavior. I don't know why he didn't say, 'I love you too.' When we got home, I felt as if I had lost him completely, as if he wanted nothing to do with me anymore. He just sat there quietly and watched TV. He continued to seem distant and absent. Finally, with silence all around us, I decided to go to bed. 15 minutes later, he came to bed, but still, I felt he was distracted. His thoughts were somewhere else. As he fell asleep, I cried. I don't know what to do. I'm almost sure that his thoughts are with someone else. My life is a disaster." Reflecting on the same day, the husband wrote this in his journal. "Motorcycle won't start. Can't figure out why." I know I'm in a lot of trouble, but it is true. We do tell our stories. Now, as I got this part of my lesson crafted this week, I actually paused and thought to myself, maybe by now you're thinking, human communication is complicated. And it is. And there are lots and lots of opportunities to mess this up and misunderstand, and there are. Good news is that God helps us with our storytelling. And so I want to wrap this morning just with three quick things I think we find in Scripture that will help us with this. So how do we deal with our storytelling tendencies? Number one, we need to learn to talk to each other. Can we start there? I'm headed over to Matthew 18, if you go there in your Bible. Matthew chapter 18. We need to learn to talk to each other. Jesus told us to do that. In Matthew 18 and verse 15, "If your brother sins, go and show him his fault in private. If he listens to you, you have won your brother." Listen, when we are at odds with each other about something, the first thing we do, it's not post a rant about it on Facebook. Even if you leave the names out, that still isn't what the Lord said to do. Or I'm going to go and tell my friend who always takes my side and will back me up. That is not going to help. Jesus said, the first thing I need to do is I need to go to that person and have a conversation with them. Why is that so vital? Because my story involves someone else who may have information I don't have. I learned that with my kids. When my oldest son was a senior in high school, he came home from school one afternoon and he said, "Well, you're not going to like the grade I got on my research paper." He said, "My teacher cut my grade in half, took off 50% because I forgot to staple the final copy to the rough draft." He tells me this story, and I look at him and say, that is not true. And he says, Dad, it is absolutely true. That's exactly what she did. And of course, understanding that children are absolutely always objective when they report about what happens with their teachers at school. I called a meeting with a teacher. And I went to the room and we sat down together. I should have known something was coming when she had this stack of paperwork sitting next to her for our meeting. I was at least smart enough to say, well, this is the story I got when my son got home. And she said, well, that's some of the story. Let me tell you the rest. And she started walking through all the things that he hadn't done that he was supposed to do. He was supposed to do that, and it wasn't on time, and he was supposed to turn this in, and I didn't get that at all. There were no note cards, and they were supposed to be submitted, and I gave him some grace on this, and I cut him some slack there, and I gave him an extra day, and she went on and on and on until finally she looked at me and said, Mr. Banning, I felt like your son had been cut enough slack on this, and it was time to be held accountable. And I said, I agree, and thank you, and I need to go home and kill a child, right? My work has brought me into a lot of meetings where brethren were trying to work out problems with each other, and there just has never been an exception where that conversation didn't bring to the table facts typically that both sides didn't have, which is why we need to talk. My story isn't a fact. And there may be more facts that will change my story. We need to talk. Number two, plug into all of that as well, the need to apply the golden rule. Remember Jesus talking about that just before he starts wrapping up the Sermon on the Mount? In Matthew 7 and verse 12, Jesus says, in everything, therefore, treat people the same way you want them to treat you, for this is the law and the prophet. That's a pretty simple principle, isn't it? Treat people the way that you want to be treated. And so I start thinking about all the times in my life, and I can see a lot of them as I look back, where it would have been easy to misread, my words and my actions. In fact, there could be someone possibly who could testify honestly today that they saw David flying through the streets of Beaumont, Texas at 3 a.m. one Sunday morning, violating some traffic laws. And that would be true. Because at 3 a.m. that morning, I got a call that my good friend had died. And I needed to get to hospice where his family was there. There's more to that story. And I know that I have sat quietly and somberly through dinner with friends and could easily have left the impression that I was upset with them, when the truth was, I had just had a really unpleasant conversation earlier in the day, and I was still trying to get over it. Have you ever been there? And frankly, I've had some weeks, not most weeks, but some weeks where it was just one problem after another, work, home, kids, you know the situation. And by Friday, my very last nerve was gone and my filter had completely evaporated. And I'm quite sure in my dealings with some people that I was abrupt and unkind. You know what I want in moments like that? I want people to be gracious to me. And if not gracious, I at least want to have a conversation. And so it occurs to me, if that's how I want people to treat me, then that's the way I need to treat them. We need a little golden rule here. And then finally, we need to do a better job assuming the best in other people. I think love requires that. In fact, some believe that that is exactly what Paul has in mind. If you go to 1 Corinthians 13 for a minute, when he gives us this famous list that describe how love behaves, love in real life. At the end of that, he says in verse 7 that love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Those of us who sing bass know verse 7, because in the song, that's our part, and we just repeat it over and over again. And I will tell you, I get about half of that verse, right? I mean, when you do more than just mutter through the words and actually pay attention to them, when he said love bears all things, I think I know where he's going with there. And when he says love endures all things, I think I know what that means. But in what sense does love ever believe all things and hope all things? What is that about? Well, some believe that what Paul is trying to say is that love doesn't give up on people. Love is always optimistic, always assumes the best in their words and actions. And again, plug in the golden rule here. Don't you want people to do that for you? I do. Because frankly, sometimes I say dumb things. I mean, I don't mean them to be hurtful. They just come out that way. You ever do that? And I would really want people to take what I say and say, wait a minute, is there a good way to take that? Or is there a good way to understand what he did? I want people to do that for me. So if there is a good way to interpret someone's words or actions or an opportunity to extend grace, that should be my choice. So if someone blows right past me in the hall, doesn't speak, you know what I'm going to assume? That they found something they forgot to copy for their Bible class. And they are rushing back there to get it done because I have been there before. How about you? And if someone's kind of short with me and abrupt, I'm going to say maybe it was a bad week because I've had those too. And if I don't get invited, I'm going to assume it's because the host was serving someone else who had needs. I remember saying to someone several years ago, if you haven't been invited to my house in the last couple of months, it's because your marriage isn't falling apart or you're not about to lose your faith. Because those are the only people who've been in my house the last few months. Maybe someone's ministering to others. Listen, I'm not saying there are no bad players, that there aren't people who do evil things who are driven by evil motives. What I am saying, brothers and sisters, let's force them to work really hard to convince us that that's true. And until they do, I'm just going to keep on assuming the best. We need to be careful about the stories we tell. One group of guys did that and nearly got the Apostle Paul killed. And the truth is, our storytelling continues to damage families and hurt friendships and hamper the work of the kingdom of God. We need to be careful about the stories we tell. Hope you'll join me in thinking about that. It's interesting that Jesus urges us not to give up on people. Interesting because I don't think he gives up on us either. I know sometimes we think that he will. We just think we've been so bad or what we've done so terrible or we've been so far away from him or gone for so long that surely by now he's just decided he's done with me and moved on. And the truth is that is never true. Jesus is always hopeful and optimistic and wanting wherever we are, whatever we've done, wanting us to come back home. Isn't that good news? Aren't you glad even when you've really messed up, he continues to love you? And so maybe you're sitting there today saying, that's me. I've been a long, long way from home. And you've been wondering if he even wanted you back. He does. And this morning, more than anything, he'd like to see that happen. But you have to decide. So if you need to become a disciple for the first time, or you've been a disciple, you've just been away and you need to come back home, let's break out the celebration in heaven. You respond today. Come on down to the front right now while we stand, while we sing together. Come right in.